You know, I'm sorry to break it to you, but a lot of plant care content on the internet is confusing, misleading, and sometimes it's downright wrong. It's really on the content consumer, the plant person, to vet who they trust online and who they're learning from. And that's why I'm sitting down today with somewhat of a unicorn. He's a rare intersection of social media plant superstar. He has millions and millions of followers across all of the channels. And also, he's a guy who's done his homework and he knows what he's talking about. And you're really going to realize that very quickly in this conversation. He goes by Tanner the Planter online. You've probably seen one of his multiple viral plant care videos all over TikTok and Instagram. But there is so much more beyond this short form plant content creator. And I'm so thankful that we got this long form conversation on this podcast to not just discuss like his incredible business and his incredible platform, but his knowledge and also kind of spill some tea together. Tanner isn't afraid to share his real opinions, which I really appreciated. So buckle up and enjoy this conversation.
Welcome to the Growing Joy with Plants podcast, where we not only learn how to care for plants successfully, but how to simply and affordably use our plant babies to cultivate more joy in our lives by doing so. I'm Maria, former plant killer turned happy plant lady, author of Growing Joy, The Plant Lover's Guide to Cultivating Happiness, speaker, podcaster, and most importantly, your new best plant friend. On Growing Joy with Plants, you'll find conversations about houseplant care, gardening tutorials, and wellness through the lens of plants.
Hi, plant friends. My name is Maria. I am here to help you care for plants and grow joy by doing so. If you're new here, welcome. If you are a repeat listener, welcome home. I'm so excited to have Tanner. You might remember the wonderful conversation I had with his wife, Erica, a couple months back. And now it's Tanner's time. We're celebrating his book today, and he's giving us a peek behind the curtain of how he built his brand. Also, I just want to say, if you've been around here for a while, I would be so honored if you would consider leaving a review on your preferred podcast player. Those reviews, I know it sounds silly, but they really do help us reach more new plant parents. And I really want to help every plant parent care for plants and grow joy. So if you could take a moment to leave a review for the podcast on your preferred podcast player, or send this episode or send a recent episode you've listened to a friend who you think would love it. That would mean so much to me. All right. Without further ado, I'm so excited to bring this conversation with Tanner to you. Tanner, welcome to Growing Joy.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
So excited. I always get so excited when my plant friends in the space have books because being an author is something that you will not understand the effort and the craziness that goes into doing a book until you do it.
I had no idea. And I think most people might even turn down the opportunity if they knew the work involved. I didn't know the work involved. It's insane. It's really cool though, but a lot of work.
Yeah, so much work. And like, you get your book advanced and you're like, oh, this is so much money. And then like, you do the numbers of how much time you end up spending writing and editing and promoting, and you're like, oh yeah, but it's the coolest thing. A mentor of mine once said a book is like your most expensive business card you'll ever have.
I hope it's more than that, but if it's just that, then that's fine as well. If it's as effective as, you know, as much as it costs to make, then heck, I'm all for it.
Yeah, yeah. So before we dive into this book, Tanner the Planter, the most epic brand that has like blown up, you know, in COVID, but you've been around for longer than that. So I'd love to know kind of your journey with falling in love with plants and then building the Tanner the Planter brand.
I think I always had a love for plants and I just didn't really know it because growing up where I grew up, which is in Northeast Oregon, you're surrounded by all things plants. And so it kind of becomes a part of you in a way. My dad always had a big garden growing up and we had a ton of house plants, but I didn't really appreciate them as much as I do now. But when I moved here to Texas, where it's very flat and comparatively dry to Oregon, I realized I was missing some of that greenery. Or I guess I didn't really know what I was missing, but what I found myself doing was constantly traveling to Arkansas up to the mountains to camp and to rock climb. Mm. And I'm like, why do I keep doing this? And it was a call sort of to nature. And so I started it bringing in some of those plants back in 2016, 2017, that I remembered my dad growing in our house back in Oregon. And, you know, I was dismayed with the lack of what I would consider solid or just really sound information online for growing plants. I'm sure everybody has had the experience where you have a question about a plant and you go online and there's six different answers and they're all conflicting. And so I'm like, wait a second, this is weird. How have we been taking care of plants for hundreds or, I mean, thousands of years, really? And there's no like definitive information. There is definitive information, just most people don't teach it. That's kind of what I set out to do with my social media, just sort of showing people what I was doing to learn them as they were learning them. They really liked the tips and it snowballed into this.
Mm-hmm. So what did you do before being a full-time plant guy?
My wife and I owned a party rental business and she had her own business as well, a multi-level marketing business. And so we kind of still work together a lot of the time, but just in different fields. And then before that, I was actually, well, simultaneously, I was working at Discount Tire, which is a tire shop here. Well, they have them all over the United States, but yeah, I was working at it here in Texas.
Oh my gosh, from tire salesman to TikTok sensation, that's quite a headline.
I wish I was a salesman. They wouldn't have me. I was a technician in the back.
You were a technician. Oh my gosh. So you've always been kind of hands-on, sensory, you know, always been good with your hands, good with figuring things out. There's a lot of parallels between that and plants.
Not good with my hands, but good at figuring things out. I'm very good at observations and pattern recognition, which is very helpful when you're taking care of plants. In fact, I think that taking care of plants is a lot of pattern recognition, just noticing those small changes in your plants. Yeah.
The seasons are a pattern every year. It's the same pattern over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Where did you turn to get your information when you were learning?
Mostly the University of Missouri, University of Florida. Gosh, there are so many.
You didn't go to their classes, but you used their extension website. Like you were reading papers on their extension websites.
Google Scholar. Basically, when I was going to look for the answers, you know, when I didn't know how to take care of these plants, I was coming up like the first hits are always these blog articles.
Mm-hmm.
And those were the articles that were conflicting. And so I'm like, I know people study, this is a science. They study horticulture. They study botany. There's got to be some definitive answers. And so I just went to Google Scholar and I started reading all the material that they had scientifically proven and studied over years and years and years. And then I sort of translated into something that I could understand because I only have a high school diploma. So it's not like I'm some fancy, smart guy out there, but I had to make that information understandable to myself. And then I relayed that onto my audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's getting harder and harder to discern in every facet, obviously with plant care, but also with any type of information you find on the internet or news, like to discern what is real and what isn't. And now I feel like ChatGPT makes it even harder, AI, because all AI is doing is sourcing all those blogs that are the first couple of hits and then spitting out, you know, what they say. And it's sad because I feel like a lot of people just get the wrong info. They earnestly Google and try and show up to have their plants succeed and then fail, even though they're trying their hardest to do whatever the blog told them to do.
Yeah, we're absolutely running into that right now as well, where people at first, when Google came out, it was like, oh, that's the answer for everything. And then people slowly kind of learned that, okay, anybody can put something on Google. It's not like a definitive source of information. But now with AI that has come out, everybody sort of like reset that and they believe AI just because, you know, and they're believing these things blindly. And like you said, AI is just scraping the internet for the same exact answers and packaging it in a different way, but it's no more accurate than it was before. Just Googling.
Totally. ChatGPT has that planty, like special GPT that you get when you, you know, have their $20 subscription. And it makes me really nervous for beginners.
I've played around with a lot of these different AIs and I get DM'd almost daily about ChatGPT or whatever AI said to do this. What do you think? And I'm like, well, that's wildly, wildly wrong for your situation. But you know what I mean? It's just giving general answers to very specific questions. And that's usually or very often a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. How do you handle if someone comes up to you and they're like, I've been putting ice cubes on my soil every single day because that's what the internet told me. Like, what's wrong? Like, how do you handle that when people come and they throw blogs or they throw things in your face?
Yeah. Well, in that particular one, I kind of just asked them, do you know where orchids grow in nature? Mm-hmm. And usually they either know and you can see the wheels turning in their head and like they grow somewhere tropical and ice isn't tropical. Okay, yes, I understand that. But then, or I have to like spell it out. No, these plants live in places where ice does not exist. And plants have been adapting to their environments to be able to survive in them for thousands and potentially even millions of years, depending on the plant. So they have no adaptation to adjust to ice. So just don't do it. But, you know, early on, I would argue quite a bit, like I wanted them to be right. And it wasn't that I wanted to be right. I wanted them to have the information so they could go on and have success, because I have found a tremendous amount of joy with my plants. So if they can know, just don't put ice on there, like they might have a full lifetime full of joy from their plants, you know, but it's the internet. You just can't argue with everybody. So I just put the information out there and I hope that it's met with the intention that I had when I put it out.
Yeah. So talk to me about your TikTok account or your Instagram. What is your primary, Instagram or TikTok?
It depends on what you mean by primary. Like the biggest following?
Yeah.
TikTok's the biggest by far. Yeah.
Or I guess, do you create content for a certain platform and then kind of trickle it to the other platforms? Or do you create specific content for each platform?
I create content. All my short form content is the same. And then my long form content would be different for YouTube. Sometimes there is a little bit of a crossover, but in terms of following, my biggest is TikTok with 1.8 million followers. It's the largest houseplant social media in the United States, at least. And then, but Instagram is where I consume the most content. Mm-hmm. So if that's what you mean by primary, I actually am on Instagram more.
Yeah. Or the one that like motivates you the most. So actually, I think your answer would be Instagram, but you're making the same content. Whatever content you create is going across all of them.
My biggest motivation is actually Facebook, because that's where all of our customers come from. Like 90% of our customers come from Facebook. So, you know, with 20 employees, you have to keep the ball rolling. So Facebook, I guess, would be my priority that way.
Yeah, totally.
Three ways to answer your question.
Yeah, I love that. So walk me through like, okay, it's 2017. You want to bring plants home. You decide to start documenting your journey. You grab Tanner the Planter on Facebook or whatever the first one was. How have you built this epic brand? Like, how have you become the largest social media presence for plants in the country?
I really don't have a great answer for you other than the partnership with my wife. Creating content, as you know, is really difficult. Like it's very, very time consuming. Put on top of that, the fact that we have a brick and mortar business and an online business, which were both started before we had the following. Like we opened these things up and then the following came after that. So we've been scrambling for the past, you know, 6 or 7 years, managing the following and managing the huge increase in traffic and sales, really. You know, 2 years ago, we went from having, gosh, like 2 employees to needing 15 employees in the matter of like 2 months. Like everything was just exploding. And so managing that on top of, you know, being able to stay consistent with social media, there's no way I could have done it alone. Erica, my wife, she managed the store. She kept everything going. She's really the one that has grown the business. I'm just the person like in the forefront making all these videos because I am just genuinely really passionate about the plants. My wife is very genuinely passionate about the business and plants are secondary to her, where for me, it's flopped. The plants are first for me and second is the business. But I definitely couldn't have done it without her. But I would just say the consistency and just showing up exactly how I am. Like, I'm not good at pretending. My wife will tell you that I'm really not good at pretending or faking anything. And so I guess just showing up as I am on the internet, there's enough weird people out there like me that want to, you know, learn from me. So I'm very grateful.
Yeah. I've been lucky enough to meet Erica in person, and I think most people don't know that there is a whole 50, you are 50% of the Tanner, the Planter brand. And I bet you would say you're less than 50% and that Erica is more. Like with the way you guys support each other and speak about each other, you have such a sweet marriage. And, you know, I think a lot of people don't understand that Erica is like such a huge part of this brand, and she's such a sweet, warm person. How have you guys together faced the challenges of, whoa, we went viral on TikTok. We've got all these orders. We've got to go from 2 to 20 people. Like, how have you guys taken on that expansion? Because I'm sure there are people listening that are so curious to see how someone who was a technician in the back of Discount Tires then all of a sudden becomes, you know, the boss of 20 to 25 full-time staff.
Well, there's a lot of really good people. It's not just me. It's not just Erica. We do have a lot of great people that are in there. It's very much a family business. Like my stepdaughter right now, she's 20 or 19, and she's running our packing facility right now. She's like the packing manager. She's an expert. She does everything extremely well. She runs everything really, really well. Our other daughter, our oldest daughter, is at the packing facility right now, but she also works our brick and mortar store. So there's a lot of really great people in there that make the magic happen. But ultimately, something that Erica and I have decided on even before we got into social media and became internet famous, if that's what you want to call it, we always come back to ourselves. Like we believe that everything that has happened to us in terms of our success with the plants and the business, whatever you want to say success is, because of our marriage, like because of our relationship, because of our connection. Mm-hmm. So when things get rough and stressful, because it is just massively stressful. I mean, we're shipping live plants and
hoping
people can, the stakes are high. And we always make it a point to come back to each other first. Like just the other day, we do something every quarter, and that is what we call an appreciation day, where we unplug completely. We tell all of our staff, you can't contact us because our phones are gone. They're off. We're disconnected. And it's helpful that we live out in the country in the middle of a forest. We don't have any neighbors. It's quiet. It's whatever. And we spend the whole day just appreciating each other. So, you know, we'll do something special for breakfast in the morning, you know, make each other breakfast. And it's just so intentional and it's so reconnecting. But we do things like that on a smaller level in between our days of appreciation to keep that up, because we know when things start not going well for our business, it's directly, our observation is that it's directionally or directly proportionate to how connected we are. So we connect and then we go out into the world.
So in my pregnancy, I've been really intentional about what I'm putting in my body, particularly when it comes to sugars and dyes and all the weird stuff that we find in packaged food. And I am so thankful that I have had Manucora Manuka honey in my back pocket for years now as my go-to sweetener for coffees, yogurts, and sometimes just as a little snack on a spoon. You've heard me talk about Manucora honey on this podcast because I use it in my coffee to make my brown sugar shake and espresso dupe. It is this rich, creamy, caramel tasting honey. It's unlike any honey you've ever tasted. Even just by looking at it, you know it's like so much better than your you know, grocery store honey bear. But it's not only delicious, it's ethically produced by Manukora's master beekeepers in the remote forests of New Zealand. And it has bioactives in it that have three times more antioxidants and prebiotics than regular honey. And these help support your cells and gut. And all you need is one heaping teaspoon each morning to get the most out of those bioactives. So if you've been hearing these ads for a while, because you know I've been loving Manucora for years, and you've been curious, now is a great time to try it. Head to manucora.com/bloom to save up to 31% on your first purchase. Plus, you get $25 worth of free gifts with the starter kit. It comes with the MGO 850 plus Manuka honey jar. I've gone through so many of those. 5 honey travel sticks, which are amazing for vacations, a wooden spoon, and a guidebook. So check it out at Manukora, MANUKORA.com/bloom to save 31% plus $25 worth of free gifts. All right. So spring is here. And after winter, we all want to do a little spring cleaning, right? We all want to prep for spring. And your houseplants could really use some prep as well. I highly recommend removing old leaves, giving your plants a shower, wiping their leaves off, cleaning them up, and getting them ready for the growing season. Also, oftentimes, this is when you should be repotting your plants with fresh soil, adding a little bit of fertilizer, boosting their light, and just setting them up for general success. And you should be doing that with Espoma Organic. They have everything you need to make happy plants. They have everything you need to make happy houseplants, and all of their products are organic. All of my houseplants are potted in their potting mix. It's the green bag. It's iconic. It's light. It's well draining. The roots can breathe. It's got mycorrhizae in it. Speaking of mycorrhizae, I also add a little bit of their Biotone Starter Plus, which is actually their outdoor product for transplants. So when you plant up your garden, you should put Biotone Starter Plus in your garden, in the hole that you're actually putting your transplant.
in. It helps reduce transplant loss. It helps increase the plant bulking up and establishing faster. And I have found that it really helps with repotting as well. And then also, I love their gentle indoor fertilizer. I use it year round because my plants are under grow lights. But if you have plants in windowsills, this is the time to start adding that liquid fertilizer to your watering can. The bottle is super easy. It's liquid. The cap is the measuring tool. You pour it in your watering can and off you go. And it's gentle, so you don't have to worry about burning your houseplants. So set yourself up for success this spring. Get Espoma Organic Potting Mix, Biotone Starter Plus, and indoor liquid plant food for your houseplants and be so happy to grow alongside them. To find out where your local Espoma dealer is, you can go to espoma.com or you can click the link in the show notes to go to my Amazon storefront where I've curated all of my favorite Espoma products for both indoors and outdoors. So check it out.
That's beautiful. Maybe your second book is going to be a book about marriage.
Who knows? You never know. I mean, we're just, you know, we really do believe that, gosh, we were just saying this the other night. We talk in bed a lot, pillow talk, right? And we were saying like, there wouldn't, like, if people loved each other like we love each other, or if people could be loved like you love me, there wouldn't be any of this like terrible stuff going on in the world. Because as I am right now as a man, and how she feels as a woman right here, is so at peace with the world and life, you would have no motivation to do anything nasty. Mm. And that's kind of what we go back to. If we're getting too far away from that, we have to come back.
Mm. Yeah, that's real. Because I feel like if you have that solid foundation, even just with loving yourself, right? Or loving someone else and allowing yourself to be loved by someone else, if that fills you up and makes you feel complete, then you don't have to go looking to be completed by external forces or to be validated by putting people down or being mean or all of that kind of stuff. You know, there's a sense of security. And I know Erica has said to me multiple times before when we've chatted, she was like, yeah, if the business fell away, like, we don't care. Like, we would figure it out. Like, if Famous in Oregon, like, went away and Tanner the Planter went away, like, we would go do something else and we would be okay.
Yeah. And that really gives us the bravery, the confidence, whatever you want to call it, to go and like take all these risks. Cause we know at the end of the day, it's all we say, you and me, baby. It's her and I. So if everything goes away, we're still together. So right. That's the best part of life. So who cares? You know, we could go off, we could be homeless. We could be out in the, we could live right out here in our forest and who cares? Like we're going to be happy because we're together and what greater privilege in life, you know?
Yeah. That's beautiful. Well, shout out to Erica. We love her. And, you know, she's the best. So now, obviously, we have to chat about plant care. You wrote such a great book. I was so relieved. Like, there were so many. I feel like when you see an influencer get a book deal and, like, then you have to read their book and I do, you know, maybe support their book on a podcast. And sometimes you, like, hold your breath. And meaning, if someone that doesn't have a degree in horticulture is writing a book about plant care, where are they getting their sources from? Are they citing things correctly? Are they talking about things correctly? Like, are they platforming the wrong advice? And there were multiple times when I was reading your book where it was like such an exhale of like, okay, he didn't, you know, he talked about how the NASA study on clean air is wrong, or not wrong, but like misinterpreted. Like, okay, he talked about this. Okay, he talked about this. Like, for me, it was like just such a relief to read your book, but also the formatting of it, like it's such a fun read. It's such an easy read. How did you approach writing it? Like when Simon & Schuster, who is your book with?
Simon & Schuster, yeah.
When they came to you and was like, we'd like you to write a book, like what was your original view? And is the book that came out what your original impression was?
That's such a wonderful question. My approach was to be technical enough to be accurate, but not so technical to turn off the average plant person. Because the truth is, like, you don't need to know all of that scientific information to be successful with your plants, right? Mm-hmm. But you need enough of that information to have an understanding to, like, know why you're doing the thing. So mm-hmm. I was trying to toe that line quite a bit. And then, of course, there are a lot of stories in there that highlight how I developed the techniques that I go out and preach that helped build the social media following that we've got. Some foundational things. It's basically mastering the basics, because that's all plant care really is. Like, you can get a lifetime of massive enjoyment from your plants by just knowing or really understanding a few different things, like three things. So like, if you can master those things, you're off to the races, baby.
Mm-hmm. And you can have 95% of plants thrive in your home. You know what I mean? If you've got the basics, you can have an urban jungle of your dreams. You don't need to be the horticulturist to be able to fill your home with plants and have them be happy. You can take the next level 2.0, custom media, all sorts of grow lights. Like, you can take that approach, but you don't need to in order to benefit from having plants.
Absolutely. And that's one of the main messages of the book, is that like, you can take it to that part if that's something that you enjoy. Everybody enjoys different parts. Like, you may see in some of my videos, I do repots all the time, like on social media. And people, there's inevitably always a comment that's like, someone pays you to do this. And I get it on one hand, because it's really simple, right? It's a very easy, simple task. And a lot of people really enjoy doing that. But then there are other people who it causes a lot of stress and anxiety, especially if they're a beginner. So if we can eliminate some of that by just giving some of the basics, then that's wonderful. And you can just figure out what you love about the houseplant hobby, whether that's talking to them, maybe that's looking at them, maybe that's repotting them. It doesn't really matter. As long as you're getting the joy from them, then that's worth having them in your house, right? Mm-hmm. So just figure out what you like and lean in on that. And don't worry about the stuff you don't really enjoy so much.
Totally. I want to focus our conversation on biggest mistakes you've seen, because the interesting thing about you as a content creator as well is like, yes, you have this enormous platform, but you're doing those repotting videos because you have clients at your local brick and mortar store bringing in plants to be repotted. And then you have the opportunity to film the service that you're offering. But I don't know how many other content creators truly interact with as many plant parents in person and seeing plants the way that you do. Also that you're selling and shipping plants to so many people. So you've really seen a lot. Is there one plant story of like a customer that you've had that like when they brought the plant into your store, or like when you heard the story, you're just like, oh boy, this is wild. Like, this is crazy.
God, there are so many of those stories. Yeah, because on one hand, like, I won't get into it too much, but when you gain a following, like on social media, people believe you are something that you're not. Mm-hmm. And so there was this one story. My wife always says, if we have a bad review on our business, it's because of Tanner. And it's the truth. And if ever we have a bad review, it's always my fault. And it's usually because of something like this. So a couple of years ago, a lady walked into our store and she was carrying this bonsai pot. And there was what looked like, she just grabbed like a broken branch, like off the ground, and like shoved mm-hmm. it in the pot like that. And she slides it across the table and she's like, what can you do for me? And I kind of thought she was like halfway joking. I'm not really good at reading people. And so I was like, try again? Because it was
another bonsai, right?
Yeah, it was literally a pot of soil with like a massively dead stick. So much, I thought it was a joke. And she took that very seriously. She thought that I was going to be able to like bring this dead, basically dust plant back to life. And of course, I'm not able to. I'm only human right here. But yeah, there's a lot of stories like that. I will say one of the biggest triumphs that I had was actually over a Syngonium a few years back. And this was a little bit early on with the following. Nobody really locally knew who I was. They still really don't. Our store is supported mostly by people that travel to come and see it. But her husband dropped off this beautiful Syngonium, really long trailing Syngonium. And it was in this huge pot, like one of those pots that are usually used for outdoor landscaping, like mm-hmm. a porch pot. So mm-hmm. it was tall and sort of narrow. It was like a 3 foot tall. So really deep. I get it. It's not doing well. It's kind of puny, you know? So we get into the roots and I see that it has root rot, because basically she's taken this, basically a 6 inch potted plant mm-hmm. and put it in this big 10 inch thing, you know, just swallowing it up with soil. And so eventually the roots rotted out. Anyway, I went in there, I cleaned up all the roots. I did all the regular protocol. I got it back to square one. I put it back in a small pot, like an appropriate pot. And the next day I get this phone call from the wife whose plant it is. And it's a sentimental plant. And she is just ripping me a new one because I've killed this plant. I don't know what I'm doing. You call yourself a professional, all this sort of thing. And I just listened to her for like 5 minutes, just rant on me, you know, just bagging on me. And I'm like, ma'am, like, I've done all of like the standard protocol. I've done this a million times. That's something that having a brick and mortar store that offers repotting will do, is fast track you on experience for repotting. I promise it will be fine. And she just hung up on me. She was so upset. And then about 6 or 8 weeks later, she calls back and she says, my Syngonium is beautiful. It's never been better. thank you. This was my mother's plant. I got it from her funeral. Da 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 da. She became a customer for life after that. But so it was a really sweet triumph. And now she's a plant lady and she has a whole bunch more in her house. But sometimes it takes a little bit of patience. Sometimes you just have to endure the licking. But we're just ultimately happy that she now has the plant and it's thriving beautifully.
That's amazing. Yeah, I think it's hard, you know, and going back to when you said, you know, people are like, someone would pay you for, you know, repotting. But what so many people don't understand is plants are so emotional. And so many people have these like heirloom plants or like, just like you said, the plants that they were given at a funeral. And if it dies, it's the last thing that they have from this person's funeral that passed away. Like the stakes are actually incredibly high when you think that they're not, because it's just like a dumb plant. And that is too, probably as the service provider, like you have to take into account, you're actually dealing with someone who's like in the midst of grief or in a real anxiety attachment situation. Something in your book that I thought was interesting is you actually have a section that talks about like, it's just a plant. Like the stakes actually don't have to be high and you have to give yourself more grace. So I'd love to hear your take on that as well.
It's interesting that you bring that up because that's actually the reason that I put that in the book.
Mm-hmm.
People were coming into the store all the time and saying, you know, I've got this orchid, I've got this, whatever it is, some sentimental plant. And it was from a funeral. It was a gift for some reason, something. It's always sentimental. Yeah. And they're just distraught. Like I see the pain on their face. I see the stress, you know, and meanwhile, they're dealing with like an actual important death in their life. And meanwhile, they're saddled with this new stressful thing. You know what I mean? And so I started saying, look, I understand that you're going through a tough time, but the person who this plant represents would not want you to be upset about a plant. You know what I mean? Like, I believe that you'll gain perspective. Like once you die, I'm hoping that we gain perspective, you know, and maybe we get a second chance or something like that. And I guarantee you, the second this person goes up into heaven or wherever the afterlife is, whatever the case is, if you do gain perspective, fretting over a plant would be a massive waste of time and a counterproductive to what I believe plants are actually out there for anyway, to get the joy from. You know, like, look, I can't eat this. What else can I do from it? I can enjoy it. Why would I choose to stress over it? Especially if it's supposed to mean something special to me. Like, I will enjoy it as long as I can. If it lives, that's wonderful. I can enjoy it for a lifetime. If not, I'm not going to beat myself up over it.
Totally. For my wedding, I had Hoya hearts at every table setting. And part of the favor was take a piece of our hearts home with you. And we thought it was so cute in Hoya
hearts.
That's
sweet.
Meanwhile, Hoya hearts, you know, blind cuttings, don't have that long of a shelf life. You can't really grow, need pretty intense light, don't like being overwatered. So like, did we set our guests up for success? And also after we got married, we moved like 4 times in 1 year. And so the final Hoya, we had only a couple of Hoya hearts from our wedding, but it died when we... I think it was the third move. And I was like, oh, Maria, like, you dummy. Like, this is the plant from your wedding and you're letting it die. But then I'm like, yeah, but like, our love isn't dying. Like, we're still married. We still got married that day. Just because this plant died didn't mean anything, you know? But I did have to kind of like walk myself through that amending shame process. Uh-huh. And I think it's really important. And is there a way that you can memorial, you know, can you repot, can you keep the pot that the orchid was in and put a new plant in it? That's a little bit easier. The other thing with these funeral plants that drive me nuts is like, they're hard to care for plants. A lot of people kill orchids. Like if you don't know how to care for an orchid, you're not necessarily going to intuitively care for it. And also a lot of people think their orchids die when the flowers die off, even though that's not true. So like most people get orchids for deceased people, you know, or like the peace lily that really wilts very dramatically. And then that freaks people out. So I feel like you're like set up for double failure with these funeral plants because they're not the easiest plants to care for. I wish they could just all be pothos, you know?
Yeah, you know, and my thing with that too, if you ever ask the Floral Society about me, don't. They hate me over there because you're talking about the orchids being a wrong gift or sort of a weird gift to give somebody who's grieving because they're difficult to care for. But my bone to pick is with the florists who plant all of these plants in no drainage.
I know.
That's the killer for me.
Covered in moss.
Covered in moss.
Decorative moss.
Like literally, like not only are they with no drainage, setting you up for failure, but they're potting plants that need different care in the same pot
yep.
with no drainage and saying, good luck, enjoy this, enjoy watching this die.
Right.
Thank you. You know what I mean? That's what irks me.
Yeah. It's like, you got to think about it. If you get a plant from a florist that looks like that, you have to think about it as a longer living floral bouquet. You know, like it's not going to survive. Like it's not going to live like a normal house plant.
Which is so interesting because last year, actually where we met you at TPIE last year in Florida, we went to one of our growers in North Florida. And he's a second generation grower. His mom was still there as well. They've been doing it for, I don't know, since like the 70s. And it was so interesting, their take on plants, because she said when they started, that's really what houseplants were. They were just meant to be something pretty that you looked at until it died. It wasn't, she said, people weren't really fretting over keeping their plants alive. They would get an orchid and they would keep it for a few months and then they would get another one. Or they would get a peace lily and they would enjoy it for a few months until it died. But nobody was really fretting over it like, oh, I killed this one, I killed it. And this wasn't it. It was just like, oh, I'm replacing the cut flowers is basically all it was.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should maybe not get back to that completely, but like some better balance of that, at least the, you know, intention behind it or the perception.
The millennials, I'm the problem, right? It's the millennials who can't buy homes and live in small apartments and develop emotional attachments to their plants because, you know, plants were the new pets and pets were the new children, you know, in 2019. People are having kids later and I do feel like the millennials kind of shifted the emotional relationship with plants.
Yeah, perhaps a little bit. I think a lot of the case of it is people get bored as well and they need something to, honestly, sometimes I feel like they need something to complain about. Early on, one of our first employees that we hired, she couldn't keep any plants alive. And this was something that she would say almost as like a badge of honor. I kill everything. I could kill a cactus. I could kill. And it's almost like, why do you want that to be your persona? Why do you want that to be your aura? Why do you want that to be something that you are known for, is killing everything? And once I pointed this out to her and I was like, look, this is what we need to do. If you want to really enjoy plants, like get something from it, let's start with the light. And it was so great because what she would do is when a customer had a question about a plant, she would say, I don't know. Let's see what Tanner has to say. And she would pull up the YouTube video or the TikTok and she would watch it with him. And in that way, learned at the same time. Mm. And then she had a massive enjoyment for plants and she no longer had this excuse. I think that lives are generally so easy right now that we oftentimes look for problems. I don't think that's the case for everybody and every problem, of course, but I do see that happening in my personal life quite a bit.
Yeah. I also think the pandemic, like when people were just stuck inside and needed something to control when everybody felt so out of control.
Absolutely.
I think the rise of like people who have to make their own potting mix and people who have to control the light so intensely so that the plants grow perfectly is more of a control thing than like a plant thing. I don't know. I think that's interesting too. And I feel like that wasn't around before the pandemic. And also there's just more products on the market for plants as well now.
I always tell people that like before, you might have noticed this as well because you've been in this space a really long time. Like before 2019, I'll say, I had never heard of people using like chunky soil or like all of these crazy soil amendments that people use.
Or semi-hydro.
Yeah. Well, I had heard of semi-hydro, but it was very niche-y. Like if you knew somebody growing in semi-hydro, like they're a real plant nerd. It was very fringe. Everybody was really just using some mixture of like peat moss and perlite and sand maybe. Or if you were getting soil from the store, a mixture of houseplant soil and cactus soil, like just changing those ratios to the plant. And then it became this thing of like, no, you need this and you need this and you need this. And I'm over here like, you guys, you don't need all this stuff.
Yeah.
Plants are very, very simple and basic. You just have to master a few little things. You don't need all this crazy stuff.
Yeah. And if it makes you happy, by all means, do it. And even like when it comes to soil, like I've cared for plants, for like 10 years now. And I go through phases where like, from one phase of my life, all my plants, like no matter what they are planted in the like general Espoma potting mix. And then I went through like more of a nerdy phase of my life where I was like, oh, this is fun. And I started taking their orchid mix and mixing the orchid mix into the general potting mix. Or I would take the cactus mix, just like you said, and like mix it up. And I would like, because it was so fun to feel like a little scientist who like moved stuff around, you know? And then now I'm like in a very, once again, low maintenance phase of my life. And it's all just general potting mix again. So I think as long as you find it fun, that's great. And you understand the principles, but you have to understand the basics first. So thought it was so interesting that you talked about intuition and how intuition can be wrong when you're a beginner plant parent. So let's talk about this, because I think you're the first person I've seen write about this topic in a book. And I was like, yeah, dude, you're so right.
Intuition has nothing to do with being successful with plants. Everyone always talks about having the green thumb and like some natural ability to take plant or to take care of plants. We even have people who will come into the store that will say, it skipped a generation. Like, for example, yep. This happened like way more often than you would imagine. But there would be like a mom and some array of children with her, you know, usually like a daughter or two. And one of them would say, my sister can grow the plants. My mom can grow the plants. It skipped me. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's not the case. And I've proven this so many times. I'm so proud of it. My community, or our community, I really should say, is just full of people who once thought that they couldn't take care of plants, couldn't take care of orchids, couldn't take care of peace lilies, whatever the case is. But when I convince them to just say, okay, let's get rid of all the noise. Let's get rid of the six different blog articles that you've read. Let's first focus on you understanding light. Because when you understand light, that's going to open up all the windows of opportunity for your plants. After you've got that, everything else is really, really simple. And when they focused on learning that, and then, you know, watering becomes a little easier. Fertilizing is a breeze, obviously, if you just remember to do it. That's probably the hardest part. Like, you can get a lifetime of enjoyment from these plants, and it has nothing to do with like walking into a room just like, I can feel someone needs water in here. Who is it? Mm-hmm. That's not the reality. And anybody who says it is totally lying. It's all about intuition and observing, you know? So there might be a case of, with enough experience, you get like what might be considered intuition in terms of like, I can, like, for example, I can look over at this plant that's over just over there and I can tell that it needs water, not because my intuition, but I can see that it's drooping, like it's physically drooping. And I know that it's in the proper light, it's in the proper watering and all the things. So I know that it's ready to be watered. That's not my intuition. That's logic. That's observing. That's experience. Mm-hmm.
Totally. And I also think it breeds a sense of shame and failure before it, once again, like sets you up for failure. Because if you think, I am that person, I used to say it skipped a gene. I come from a lineage of Italian farmers. My mom had an amazing, you know, amazing with plants. My grandma fed her whole family from her yard. Like, and I used to be a plant killer. And I used to say it skipped me. Like, I used to brag about it just like your person did. And it is so interesting because I could tell you right now, looking at you, there's a plant wall behind me. And I could, like, my spidey senses at this point, I know which plants need water at this point. But I've had these plants for 3 years and I have the basic principles. And it's not necessarily intuition. It's just accumulated knowledge. And when you're conditioned to think, well, I either have the gift or I don't. I just feel like there are so few hobbies. Like, I used to be on Broadway singing. When people find that out, they're like, I could never sing. I can't sing. I don't think that either. Like, I think there are very few hobbies that you can't cultivate some semblance of basic proficiency in.
Yep. It's basically a matter of, you might even have to mix a little bit of delusion in there, but humans are capable of anything. Like, if you want to learn how to sing, there might be a longer learning curve or a steeper learning curve for me compared to you.
Right.
But I could still learn to sing if
you
I wanted
might not
to.
Maybe sing professionally not, the way I did. Right.
Yeah.
But like, you can, I could make you carry a tune, Tanner. Like,
I'll,
you know,
still enjoy the heck out of it.
Yeah, totally. So I thought that was such a fresh and interesting take. And also, like, once again, letting people off the hook for not necessarily being good at this in the beginning. Because another thing with intuition is you really have to explore, we've never been more disconnected to nature. And when you're disconnected to nature, how would you intuitively know a plant needs water? When I was a plant killer, I used to think watering plants was spritzing them with a spritz bottle on their leaves. I didn't realize you had to like saturate the soil because I didn't know. I was plant blind. And I like barely viewed plants as living things. So that's the other thing, like to assume people are going to have this intuition or this green thumb in a period of time where like we barely recognize plants as living things as we see it, I think is also like way too high of a standard to set.
Something I mentioned in the book is actually the very fact that our grandparents and great-grandparents, like the further you go back in generations, the more connected they were to nature and 100%. Gardening. Like 50 years ago, almost everybody, well, maybe not 50 at this point, it's 2026. Maybe like 60 or 70 years ago, like everybody had a garden. Like it was so common to have a garden, and therefore you're always, you know, observing the plants, taking care of the plants, eating from the plants. So like you're gaining those observations like as a child and you're growing up that way. So now us, I'm a millennial as well. We've seen our parents like be successful like effortlessly with plants. Well, they were raised with them and you weren't. So like it's going to take 100%. Up a little time to build up that knowledge and the same thing that they had grown up, you know?
100%. And I can't tell you like how many people I've interviewed where their story, when I say, how did you become the plant person you are? They say, similar to your story, like I grew up surrounded by plants and I kind of took them for granted. And then I left and I realized the thing that was missing was plants. And then I had to teach myself to take care of them because my mom was the one that watered the plants, or, you know, I didn't garden, it was my mom or something like that. It's just so, yeah, it's so true. And I love that that's how you opened your book, was like, hey, all of these things you feel bad about, like, don't feel bad. Everybody's going through this. Okay, the last question I have to ask you, because I was so tickled reading your book, Tanner the Planter, 1.8 million gajillion followers across all your platforms. There is a large title in your book that says social media is killing your plants. And you have built your platform, you've built your brand off of social media. So make that make sense.
They say that comparison is the thief of joy. So when plants started getting really, really popular, 2019, 2020, we saw this big shift where everyone believed you needed like the chunky soil, all of these different things. And so you were seeing other people be successful, or successful, whatever you want to define that as, online with their plants. And so you're scrolling through and post after post, like you're seeing these just immaculate, beautiful plants, and you're believing that that's what yours should look like, because, you know, social media is very idealistic. The media just in general is, if you look on any of like the home and garden magazines, the decor magazines, they always have their plants that are immaculate. There's not a flaw on them, and they're placed anywhere they want in their house because it looks really good from there. I can't tell you how many times someone has come into our store wanting a fiddle leaf fig, for example, and they want it 20 feet away from the window next to their staircase because they saw Chip and Joanna place this fiddle leaf fig right next to the staircase and I just have to have it. And we qualify people when they come to our store. If they want a fiddle leaf fig, if they want a bright light needy plant or something we know our most of our houses around here don't really accommodate for, like really, really bright light because we're trying to keep the Texas heat away. Mm-hmm. We tell them no, like we won't sell it to them. I remember this one guy came into our store and he's like, I've been here 5 times and you won't let me buy a plant. And my wife is like, well, you keep wanting bright light plants and you don't have bright light. You have low light. You need to choose from this section. So the way that social media is killing your plants is by thinking that you need to do all of these wild things. Another thing that I do is consultations. And so that, along with my exposure to a lot of customers in the store, have given me a real great sense of what people are failing at. And this is a very common scenario. Okay, your plant isn't doing well. Give me the history. What's been going on? Any recent changes? Like, give me the rundown so I know the history of the plant. And they'll say, well, I got this plant. I brought it home and I know that you need to get it out of this greenhouse soil. So I repotted it. And then I noticed a couple of days later, it wasn't doing well. And so I took it out of the pot and I looked up online and this person said that it needed to be in pond. And so I ordered the pond and I got the pond. And a week later, it wasn't doing well. And then I saw this video that, you know, I saw this fertilizer when I was checking out with the pond. And so I got the fertilizer and then it just still wasn't doing well. So I took it out. It's that sort of thing over and over and over.
Sad, because also how much money have they spent to essentially kill this plant?
So much stress. And it's just that compound stress. It's just like the plant is like, God, let me settle in. But like, because they're getting on social media and they're seeing this perfection and all of these people saying they need this and they need that to not only have success with their plants, but just to enjoy them at all, it's driving them crazy and their plants aren't any better as a result. And so then they think, oh, plants are not meant for me. I don't have a green thumb. I give up. And then they miss out on a whole lifetime of just incredible, simple joy that you can get from them. It's sad.
100%. I feel like in like 2018, was it 2018, 2019, when Instagram was still a photo app, there would be these photos of Monstera, variegated Monsteras and variegated alocasias where they're almost their entire leaf was white. And the photo was perfect because the owner captured that white leaf at the perfect time for the 24-hour period of time that that leaf was gorgeous and white and an angel, you know, like defying gravity. But then what they don't show is after 24 hours, the edges of those leaves start turning brown. The leaf starts turning yellow. There's no green chlorophyll for the plant to photosynthesize. It is so hard for the rest of the plant to support that leaf. And that leaf is going to die and like look really ugly really soon. And people would then go and try and buy these like highly variegated plants and not understand that like you can enjoy that variegated leaf, but you're enjoying it for a very short period of time until, you know, unless you have a plant with really stable variegation.
How many thousands of plants were sold with that picture? I know the pictures you're exactly talking about. And yeah, they don't show it 24 hours later, setting them up for failure. Earlier, you talked about if the book was something that, you know, when they approached me, was it something that I knew that I liked the subject matter that I wanted to carry? Did I know what my approach was going to be? And one of the things that I wanted the approach to be was a very realistic view of what plant care looks like, what your plant should look like in plant care. And so you'll notice actually in the 30 plant care profiles at the second part of the book, 30 of the most popular houseplants, we talk about how to care for them very specifically, but very easy and approachable. With that in mind, you're going to see some of the pictures and the plants are not going to be perfect. And it's on purpose. Yeah. I had to fight with the editor a little bit on that because probably for 2 weeks, I went back and forth with the editing team at Simon & Schuster talking about, you know, we want to set people up for success in many different ways. But one of those is having realistic expectations. Having realistic expectations can set you up for a lifetime of success in a lot of different areas, not just plants. And so I'm excited to show people that, but they are still idealistic in a little bit. I had to kind of
Throw
the line a little bit. So like, but if you look closely, there are flaws. There are not perfect plants in there.
Yeah. I think that's so important. And I think too, with social media, that idealistic, like I'll say, you know, Summer Rae Oaks, she's a dear friend of mine, like, and she was the plant queen and, you know, in 2020 and in the early 20s, but like, I wouldn't recommend most people live the way she lives. Like I actually, for my book launch, I stayed in her apartment, in her plant apartment in New York City. And it was so cool. But like, that's an unrealistic way for everyone to live, you know? And so I think folding in realistic representations of like what a normal home could look like is important. Not to say that Summer doesn't do an incredible job educating and making plant care really accessible. But like these social media accounts that are so aspirational need to be taken with a grain of salt because there's a lot of work behind the scenes that go into that.
A big old lump of salt, if you ask me.
Yeah,
absolutely. Because it's not for everybody and it's not how everybody is going to derive joy from it. Like, I really believe that we are ingrained like to love plants. Like it's in our DNA. If you think about it, you go back as far back as you can into human history. We've always had a connection with plants, food, clothing, medicine, shelter, all of the things. It stands to reason that we would have like this magical attraction to plants, but that doesn't mean we need a million plants around us to have joy. You might get a whole bunch of joy just from one little orchid sitting around, you know? So
it takes one plant.
Satisfy that connection any way that you want.
Totally. One last question. Did you shoot the photos at your shop for the book?
There are a few photos at the store, but we were lucky enough to have the photos done actually at our house here.
Cool.
And a lot of them are our personal plants. We got massively lucky with the photographer. Funny story, like 2 days before the shoot was supposed to happen, the photographer we had lined up canceled on us. And we were like, no, because to find a photographer like this, it's not like a 2-day turnaround kind of process. Luckily, Simon & Schuster, you know, they have great photographers that they already work with. And we were massively lucky that one of their most trusted photographers had a very small window of opportunity. She was going to have a little vacation. She came to do our book instead, right in between. I don't even know if I can say this on here. No, I can. Okay. Right. So right before us, the day before she got to our house, she was shooting Chip and Joanna. She's a regular photographer for Chip and Joanna Gaines. Mm-hmm. And then the day after, when she was leaving the shoot, actually, while she was shooting our book, she got a job for Matthew McConaughey's new whiskey.
Wow.
So I don't know how we got fit in between
those two
people. Like, but she did an incredible job. Like, if you don't get the book because of the information, for any other reason, it's just a beautiful book by itself. The photos are incredible. The illustrations are ridiculous.
Yeah,
we even had to ask the illustrator to make them less. We were like, you're doing your job too good.
Mm.
It looks too realistic. So we had to have her dial it back just a little bit because we were like, we had to have her illustrate the bugs, like mealybugs, because we figured we didn't want people to open up the book to an actual photograph of a mealybug because that's kind of jarring at an up close, like macro level.
Yeah.
So we were like, make it a little more cartoony. And she did the first drawing like so good. I'm like, is this a picture or an illustration? So the whole thing is just beautiful from top to bottom.
It really is. So where can people find you and where can people find your book? Tell us everything, the title, when it's out, all of that good stuff.
All of our platforms are Tanner the Planter and Famous in Oregon. What most people don't realize is the little secret thing is my wife and I do a twice weekly live sale. So every Tuesday and Friday at 6:30, we have our own app that we go live on. It's called Tanner the Planter. And that's actually where we give a lot of the information that we talk about in the book. Like we give lessons, we talk about each one of the plants. It's a wonderful time. It's a beautiful community. The book comes out on April 14th. It's out for pre-order right now, and you can get it anywhere that you buy books. It's on Amazon, bookshop.org, Barnes & Noble, Target, pretty much anywhere you get books online. It's available for pre-order now.
And of course, support your local bookshops if you can by pre-ordering and asking them to carry the book. You're awesome, Tanner. Congratulations. So excited to celebrate the book launch with you and see you continue to grow with Erica.
Thanks, Maria. It was great to chat with you.
All right, plant friends, I hope you loved this kind of sneak peek behind the scenes, long form experience of Tanner. We know him in his 60-second, 90-second videos, but it was really fun to get him for 45 minutes to really hear his hot takes on things. Grab his book. It's linked in the show notes. Check him out on socials. If you haven't gone back, listen to the episode that I did with his wife. It was really inspiring. She talks about how they've grown their business, and Erica is just amazing too. They're just couples goals. They're such an awesome couple, and they're such awesome people individually. So check them out. Everything's linked in the show notes. And of course, until next time, I hope you keep growing joy. Plant friend, thank you for tuning in today. It means so much to me that I get to be part of your planty journey. If you like what you heard, make sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. We have so many incredible interviews and solo episodes on incredible houseplant and gardening topics that you will not want to miss this year. And while you're over there in the podcast player subscribing, why don't you click over to the review section of Growing Joy with Plants and leave us a review? Reviews are tremendously helpful for the growth of the podcast, so thanks in advance. If you're looking for more opportunities to grow as a plant parent with Growing Joy content, we've got so many options for you. First, I highly recommend you taking the Plant Parent Personality Test. It's free. It's super fun. It takes 3 minutes to complete. At the end of the test, you're going to get your plant parent personality profile and a curated list of plants, projects, and podcast episodes that are right up your alley, tailored just for you and your lifestyle, inspired by your results. The links are in the show notes. If you're looking to uplevel your plant parent game, I have so many free downloads on my website that I think could help you, like the Understanding Natural Light download or 9 different ways to green up your office space. If you'd like to support the show monetarily and help me bring the show to as many people as possible for free, you can head to our Patreon link in the show notes to learn more about our offerings. And finally, I invite you to come hang out with me and continue the planty conversation on social media, on Instagram and TikTok. I'm Growing Joy with Maria. My DMs are always open if you have requests for topics or ideas for the show. Thank you again for listening. It is truly my honor and delight to help you keep blooming and keep growing joy. Plant care.